When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the one and the only show on the internet where we talk about such things as fantasy, sci-fi, movies, TV, robots, space, laser, dinosaur, swords, horses, time travel, and gangsters named after flightless birds. My name is Dan Selke, and I am the editor of winteriscoming.net, where we write about all those things. Here with Daniel Roman, the other editor of winteriscoming.net. Did you get it? Just get it?
I did. I was like, what flightless birds is he talking about? The penguin, those kinds of flightless birds. Got it. I'm good. It's exciting to be here on the show today. How are you, Dan? And how are all of you out there in the chat? Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see Helge, Hypers, Fantasy Fan, Ben Jack, Martha. Good to see everybody. I think, like I say this at every single show, but you came on a good one. Because for a while now, we've been teasing, and we have put up on winteriscoming.net, our site, Daniel Roman got to interview none other than a Song of Ice and Fire writer, Game of Thrones creator, experienced fantasy author, commentator, raconteur, screenwriter, nice. Suspenders enthusiast,
football fan,
George R.R. Martin. Without whom we would not be doing this job. Daniel, and today I figured we would just talk through it. Because our job is so ridiculous. I can't believe I did this for a living. I can't believe I write about space lasers and robots and stuff for a living. It's crazy.
Okay, fair.
But Daniel, let's start with, how did this come about? How did you end up in a room speaking one-on-one to Game of Thrones creator George R.R. Martin?
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this a little bit more today, just because, you know, I've been a little cagey when we've talked about it some weeks in the past, just because it wasn't up yet. So it's funny because I feel like you expect stuff like this to come about in very formal, strict ways. And really, the way that this came about was, you know, we've worked with his team and a couple of people on his team. Shout out to Sarah a couple of times in the past. So basically, when George blogged about that he was going to be in Glasgow, I already had plans to go to Glasgow Worldcon because I have a bunch of author friends who are going to be there. We'd been talking about it for months and months and months. So I had already gotten tickets and committed like months ahead of time. And then, you know, when he said he was going to be there, I basically reached out to his team and was like, hey, on the off chance he would like to do an interview and talk about pretty much anything, I'll be there too. I'll be in town. How often are we both going to be in Glasgow, Scotland? And then things kind of went from there. There was a lot of back and forth and figuring out details. But it ended up, you know, being a very wonderful experience. And yeah, I spoke to him in the bar of his hotel. So I went out there. It wasn't at the convention. And we sat in a booth there and talked about his life and times and career for around 40 minutes. So that's generally speaking how it came about. But if anyone has any questions or anything like that, this is kind of the space where we're down to talk about it. So is there any other specific things you want to know, Dan, before I just ramble forever?
Of course. Okay. Like what? I want to know first. I mean, the obvious question, what did you guys talk about?
Yeah. So this was an interesting thing. We talked mainly about his history with fandom, which if you only know George R. R. Martin from A Song of Ice and Fire, you may not
probably
be like super aware of. Yeah, which most people do. But he has like a really long history with science fiction fandom. You know, he's been involved in it like since he was a kid. And then as a young writer, he sold his first story when he was like 21. And started going to conventions, and specifically this convention, Worldcon, which it's the World Science Fiction Convention, and it goes to a different city every year. So this year it was in Glasgow. Next year it's in Seattle, Washington. I think last year it was in Chicago, Chengdu? I think.
Was it really?
Oh, no, Chengdu. You're right. No, it was in Chengdu. Yeah. The year before that it was in Chicago. But yeah, so he's if you've been reading his blog for a long time, you've probably seen him reference it. He's got a very long history of going to these conventions. He founded this thing called the Hugo Losers Club, which was like a joke because he and his close friend Gardner Dozois, who's like a legendary science fiction editor, he edited for Asimov's science fiction magazine for years. They kept getting nominated and losing. And Gardner had a joke of this, that he had been nominated more than anyone else. He lost more Hugos than most other people. So they started this club. And there are all those things like that where they're very steeped in the history of that fandom. So we talked a lot about that. We didn't talk really at all about Westeros, which is kind of crazy now that I think back on it. But
there were reasons that was off limits, because when you do these interviews, people, all the peasants watching, usually they might give a list of things not to ask or topics to avoid. Was that the case here? Yeah. Guidelines?
Yes, kind of is what I would say to that. And this is, I was kind of looking forward to talking about this because I think it is interesting knowing all of the stuff that has happened recently and, you know, the drama with House of the Dragon and all of that.
And you interviewed really him before any of that happened, right?
I interviewed him before any of his blog posts. It was in early August that I spoke to him.
Save big on your next project right now at Menards. Save time on your paint project with help from Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape. Use on walls, trim, glass, wood, or metal for clean removal and clean paint lines every time. Save big and get a 3-pack of Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape on sale now through September 22nd. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
But when we first started talking about doing this, even before stuff like Winds of Winter or anything like that, the main comeback was we wouldn't want it to be about House of the Dragon.
Sure.
And at the time I was like, well, it's on the air. Of course, like, you know, part of it was in town for Worldcon. He wanted to talk about fandom because he loves it. Like, it's hard for me to convey how much like meeting George R. R. Martin, how much like, you know, some people get famous and they're crazy, but like, he really does feel like one of the nerds. Like, not to be like, he's one of us, but like, he also just freaking is one of us. Like, you can tell when he talks about it, like, he lives and breathes this stuff and has for a really long time. But yeah, so out of the gate, the one thing we knew we weren't going to talk about was House of the Dragon. And thinking back, you know, deciding not to thinking back, it really puts that into context, because again, that was even ahead of something like Winds, which so sometimes with things like these sorts of interviews, at a certain level of interview, sometimes you let people see the questions ahead of time that you're planning to ask them. That's a fairly normal thing. So I, you know, I actually had a list, a very long list of questions about all sorts of things, including the Winds of Winter. So that really wasn't until fairly late in the process that we decided, let's not go there. Like, this conversation is really about fandom and some of his non-Westeros works, which, like, he really doesn't get asked about a whole lot. Like,
true,
any of his stories outside of Westeros, which, like, it's always such a funny thing to me thinking of, like, you know, the gripes of, like, ah, finish the Winds of Winter, he's not writing. And it's like, you know, this is a person who, like, the lion's share of his career is behind him at this point. Like, most of the works he will write, he has already written. And that's just, that's not me being negative. Sure. That's just statistically a fact, because he's been writing for 53, however many years, over 50. And he's published a ton of stuff. So, like, his illustrator, Raya Golden, was there too. So obviously we were going to talk about Voyaging, which is the graphic novels that they've been doing together. They're based on Martin's short story, or not short stories, they're really novellas about Haviland Tuff, who's kind of this androgynous space captain who has a ship full of cats. Very, very colorful character who was, like, one of his really beloved characters early in his career. So we talked about that kind of stuff. AI, we talked about, and that came up naturally. That wasn't something that I was, like, sure we were going to talk about, but it got mentioned a few times. So at that point, it's like, well, I guess we're gonna talk about this because you just brought it up. So that's the overall gist of the sorts of stuff we talked about. And again, you can, you know, faithful listeners, yes, you can go read this on the website right now.
I put links to it in the chats of the YouTube and Facebook chat if you want to go hear what he has to say.
Yes, thank you. So we talked about all that sort of stuff. We actually just published today another smaller interview with Raya specifically about Voyaging and kind of the journey of making those, because last week I mentioned this comic Meat House Man, so, which is another one she adapted of an infamously dark story of his. So the new interview just kind of talks about the journey from going from that one to Voyaging, which is the one she always really wanted to adapt, just because it's such a beloved work of his. But the other fun thing that I'll point out, so there were two fun moments from this. One was he did make one very passing Winds of Winter reference when we got into talking about, like, authors' backlists and things like that, which is you know, the books they've published before that just keep selling. Like, Game of Thrones is, like, George's backlist type thing.
Okay, nice.
He started talking about this and then was like, if I never write another word, like, if I choke to death right here on my pineapple juice, I never wrote. And then he stopped, like, mid-sentence, and leaned over the phone and was like, I will write more. I will finish the book. Which kind of puts into perspective just, like, you know, I do feel a little bad for him in terms of, like, the fame, just because I was looking at, like, his Instagram the other day, and he had, like, a picture of a dog he had adopted. Instagram? Yes, he does. I didn't realize this because I'm not on Instagram all that much, but I looked it up the other day after our interview went up. He, you know, posted pictures of, like, this dog he adopted, and people were commenting, like, good for you, go finish the book, no one cares about your dog. And it's like, how awful is that? You know, like, totally unrelated. Like, he's not even talking about Wild Cards, which is, like, a trigger for a lot of fans when he brings up Wild Cards instead of Westeros. Like, he was talking about just, like, a life thing, and people are shitty about it. So that happened, the I will finish this. And then at the end, we kind of jokingly talked about, like, if he were running a medieval kingdom, who would he want on his small council? And it turns out most of it was Tolkien, because he really loves Tolkien. So give him Aragorn, give him Gandalf. Who doesn't? Galadriel can be there. Yeah. So, yeah, that is the overall gist of the sort of stuff that we talked about. do you have, there's one other thing I'll mention, but do you have any other questions or any questions from the chat or anything like that?
Well, just say that I've always thought of, even because we cover him a lot on Winners, can we cover him a lot here? And reading just his blog or his interviews, you definitely get the impression that he is a man who got famous, like truly famous, a little later in life.
Yes.
And he has not left behind the feeling that he is a fan first, just a nerdy dude who genuinely loves stuff. I've always got that impression. I remember someone commented on your the puppy's name is Dunk. That's good stuff.
The puppy's name is Dunk. Yeah, very cute.
I remember somebody commented when you shared the interview on Twitter X, Twitter slash X. Someone just responded like, he's just a likable old nerd, isn't he? After reading it.
Yeah.
And that is always been my impression of him. And fame is hard, man. Fame is not, it doesn't seem to be easier to deal with no matter what age somebody gets famous. People who get famous as kids have problems. People who get famous when they're adults have problems. And I think it's probably pretty rare to be in Martin's shoes when he gets famous when he's later in life and he's already set in his ways.
I agree.
And has something he does. I don't think that's really a thing that's been documented very much. There's a whole industry about how much fame messes up child stars. There's not been much social research, we'll call it, into what it does to someone who's in the winter of their life. But I've always liked them. I've always believed them. And I'm glad to hear my impressions are reinforced by your 101 experience. He sounds fun.
Yeah, totally. He's very fun. Very fun guy. I spent not just the interview, but I also did get a chance to go back and spend a little more time after Worldcon, because I went to a private screening of his three Howard Waldrop short films. Cool. So that's Night of the Cooters, Mary Margaret Road Grader, and The Ugly Chickens, which I'll actually be sharing some impressions about those on the site this weekend, if you're interested out there listening. But yeah, so he had so many fun anecdotes. It's clear he just really loves this stuff. And he did talk a little bit about that fame aspect, even in the interview, where like Worldcon is a thing he's been going to literally since 1971, I think a really long time. And he talked about how it's a little less fun for him now because he was doing promotion at them, and now it's become more promotion than he likes because he just wants to come hang out, and it's really almost impossible to do that in the same way that he used to. And this is, you know, you can read him talking about this in the interview, and that links just below. It really was linked below, smacked. It was very genuine to me and very understandable. You know, Tevin, the Lore Seeker said, has George read Michael Moorcock's Elric saga? I don't know the answer to that. We did not talk about Elric, but there is a fun video you can find if you go on YouTube where like this booktuber, Library of a Viking, was at Worldcon and was on a mission to find George R.R. Martin and a few other authors and get book recommendations from them. Cool. And he did find George just like on the show floor one day near the end of the convention. And he recommended Jack Vance's, I think, Demon Prince books. It's not The Dying Earth. It's a different Jack Vance series. So like even there, like he's out just like, yeah, sure. I'll recommend you books. Yeah, totally.
Remember when he like turned off comments on his blog? Cause I mean, when he was blogging about his problems with House of the Dragon, it struck me as like, this is what a normal fan would do. I mean, God knows I complain on the internet, and it has all these other dimensions because he's also a celebrity. So it's complicated. I have two other quick questions for you. Personally, I'm just curious. Were you at all starstruck?
Yes.
Was it easy?
Yeah. No, I wouldn't say it was easy. I was definitely I've done a few, you know, I've done interviews at this point, but I haven't really done many in-person ones. I've done a lot over Zoom and over the phone and stuff like that. So actually meeting him in person, I was definitely a little, I don't really get starstruck in like the traditional sense as much, because I think when you're doing an interview, and especially one like this, where like kind of my whole angle was I just wanted to talk to him as a person and hear what he sure. like, that was kind of the way I wanted to paint it. When it became clear it wasn't going to be a Westeros focused interview, it was like, well, let's talk about the things that interest you as a person. I think that's interesting. Like, I've been a fan of his career aside from Westeros for a very long time. But yeah, I was nervous as hell, especially right before it, because so my flight out got wrecked. It got, because there was a hurricane on the East Coast of the United States. So my first flight got delayed 5 times. Then when I finally got to my first connection, we missed the connection. And then the following one we were rescheduled for got canceled because of the hurricane. So I actually had to overnight in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I got there a day later than I was supposed to. So when I got there, it was only about 3 hours before I was supposed to speak with him, and I had about 1 hour of sleep. So it was definitely very nerve-wracking, the lead up. But once I was there, I was mostly okay, I think. Sure. I hope.
The interview went very nicely. Right. It's pretty good stuff. And is there anything else from it you just thought was is worth sharing? Any funny insight, anecdote? Was he wearing the George R.R. Martin uniform? Because it wasn't on video. Was he in the suspenders and little cap? Wasn't.
Yes, he was. different cap that I didn't recognize, but had a cap, had some suspenders with, I think, like chili peppers on them. So very on brand cool. for New Mexico. and yeah, so the video, that was a conscious decision we made. We discussed whether we were going to do it on video and kind of decided it would probably be more comfortable for all of us, you know, making the best conversation, doing it the way we did, which I think was the right choice. We've got some fun comments that I want to hit on, too. Liz Bennett said, is 80 minutes with George R.R. Martin lost forever? So that is the... tell me if you're talking about something different, but I'm pretty sure that's the Bubonicon.
That one
speech that he gave, which was like great a comment. Week or two after Worldcon. I don't know. I hope not, because I would love to hear that, where he just kind of opened up and talked about what's been going on in his life. There wasn't even a narrator, or not a narrator, an interviewer or anything like that. Lizzie also asks, he seems in good health, seemed in good health to me. Is Paris well? Yeah. Paris is his wife. I don't know the answer to that. I didn't meet her while I was there. She was in Glasgow, but I didn't get a chance to meet her. Is George going to be more hands-on for the Duncan Egg series? Do you have thoughts on this, Dan?
Probably, I mean, yeah, not, but think? I guess you're in a better position to know than I am. I mean, my impression is no. My impression is that he has all these plates spinning, and he's talked about this, that he's not just House of the Dragon and Duncan Egg, but also Dark Winds and other Game of Thrones shows he's consulting on, other short films he's making. I don't think it's realistic for him to be involved. I think he... based on everything he said recently, when he's criticized House of the Dragon, thrown a little bit of, or tried to not criticize House of the Dragon openly, I'm sure he would like to hope that the people that are put in charge of these Game of Thrones spinoffs will adapt his work faithfully in a way that he approves of. It sounds like he's much more approving of Another of the Seven Kingdoms than he's House of the Dragon. I've been hearing a lot of good buzz about Another of the Seven Kingdoms. There's something going around today on Twitter X from someone who's, I mean, this is secondhand, but whatever, I don't care, who knows someone on the production and is saying they love it. They think it's hilarious. They lit up when they were talking about it. Peter Clavy's a perfect dunk. Everyone really seems, who's working on it, seems to really, there seems to be a really good vibe around Another of the Seven Kingdoms right now, which is great. And Martin himself, that I'm going to call it famous, even though it's such a tiny little corner of the internet, but I'm going to call it anyway, that famous bit where the Hollywood Reporter asked him to weigh in on the House of the Dragon controversy. And he just said, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is great. Everyone in it is so talented. I love it so much. Peace out. So,
yeah,
I don't think he'll be closely involved. I just don't think there are enough hours in the day, but I'm glad that he seems to approve of what's happening.
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't think, you know, I imagine his involvement is pretty comparable to what it was with maybe House of the Dragon season one or something. He's not writing on A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. So I think, like you said, the hope is that so the person running A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is Ira Parker, who wrote King of the Narrow Sea for House of the Dragon season one.
One of the better episodes.
One of the better episodes, and I can't find the blog post about this, but I seem to recall when George first announced it would be Ira Parker, that there was kind of a vibe of like, this was a person who he knew was familiar with Westeros, who had worked on it, and who he was confident would do a good job with Duncan Egg. And what you said about like having someone behind it who will do it well, the vibe thing, my impression reinforces what you just said. You know, I did have a few off the record conversations about Duncan Egg, and the overall vibe of that was there seems to be a lot of optimism that this one's going to turn out well, that it could be more faithful, partially because Duncan Egg is just easier to be faithful with. Like,
yeah,
with House of the Dragon, it's like some specific adaptation challenges. With Game of Thrones, it's so big and sprawling. If you're not faithful with freaking Duncan Egg, that's a very conscious choice, because it's just a very narrow focus story all about this knight and his squire. It's not like there are dragons in it. There are not tons of settings. Like, each Duncan Egg story is kind of in a specific setting or two. So it seems like there's a lot of optimism. Fingers crossed. I think there are a few things I did hear about Duncan Egg, which are not public yet, which I will say whenever they become public. part of walking the line with this stuff, but I think there's a lot of reason to be excited. And after the House of the Dragon divisiveness, sorry, Casey Bloys, I will say there's some divisiveness. I'm excited to see what the response is to Duncan Egg when it finally comes out.
Yeah. I mean, we can go into that divisiveness just a skosh more and then pivot to happiness, because there was this little bit where Deadline asked HBO CEO Casey Bloys. I think the question actually was like, how do you feel about House of the Dragon now that there's a bit of a divide in the fandom? And the CEO of HBO, basically said, I don't think there is a divide. The show did really, really well, which is true. And Deadline was like, well, I mean, at least one fan was concerned about it. And he's like, and Casey Bloys said, yes, maybe one fan was, meaning George R.R. Martin, I think is fine, by the way. I mean, he's responding to one off the cuff thing. There was like a Reddit thread with like 700 responses saying disrespectful, horrid, can't do that. And in a vacuum, it does seem dismissive. Obviously, George R. Martin is more than a fan. He's an executive producer. He's the originator of the world. He wrote the book. But I'm not going to pile on too hard for one little comment in an interview about the Emmys. And what is he going to say? I always wonder.
Which was a setup. Like,
do you expect, like, I don't expect like network executives to go like, oh, the show's in chaos. Oh, it's so bad. I'm so stressed all the time. Like, they're not going to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. That is one of those instances where when I read that, I was like, ooh, that's dismissive. I don't like it. But also, like, he is being asked this, like, he's being put on the spot. And sometimes I noticed this with a different show with their that just had its purple carpet that maybe we'll talk about a little bit later.
Okay.
Sometimes when people ask questions on like a red carpet event like that, it's almost a setup to get a headline a little bit. And I got that impression a little bit with the like House of the Dragon fans are divided. Like, you know, maybe George R. R. Martin didn't like it. Like, you know, like you said, like, what is Casey Bloys going to say to that when he has a couple of seconds to respond to a reporter on the fly? He's not thinking through his answer that deeply. So, yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's worth dogpiling. I didn't like it, but I also don't think it's worth the dogpile whatsoever.
And also just, I had another thought. Now it's gone for me. What was my thought? It was so good.
they Casey always Bloys, are.
HBO. Done. Yes, they're always brilliant. Yeah, it's fine. And by the way, Lizzie, thanks for asking. My adorable dog's name is Scruffy, who's in the background of this little... Oh, there he goes. Hey, Scruffy, how you doing?
His head popped up. His head popped up when he said
I called his name.
That's so cute.
Yeah. Speaking of House of the Dragon... we know that they've completed filming, which is good to hear.
It's you mean Night of the Seven Kingdoms?
Yes, sorry. Night of the Seven Kingdoms, yeah. The next Game of Thrones spinoff, Dunk and Egg, is finished filming. Again, kind of adding to the good vibe around it. Both the stars, Peter Claffey, who plays Dunk, Dexter Saul Ansel, who plays Egg, posted pretty nice goodbye messages. Peter Claffey posted a quote from the book. It just nice. Feels like a good vibe. It feels like they must enjoy what they're doing if they're taking quotes and putting them on their Instagram stories because they think it's cool and interesting enough to share rather than, okay, thank God I'm done with that. The vibes are good, people, which is really all we can say right now.
Yeah, totally. It seems like the vibes are good. Hard agree with that. Yeah. Seems like a good time is being had. We've got a couple of... There's one comment I just want to address. Mm-hmm. Even though... This is a GRRM one. Even though GRRM has previously denied it, do you guys suspect the reason he's taking so long to finish Winds of Winter is because he's in fact writing both Winds of Winter and Dream of Spring back to back? I'm going to say the answer to that is a hard no. I think there's absolutely nothing to that personally. I think he's pretty transparent. Honestly, just believe him when he says stuff. Like, he's not trying to fool anyone here. He's been transparent about his writing with this stuff for literal decades. But yeah, so Night of the Seven Kingdoms seems like it's going well. I don't think there was really anything else to point out about that, right?
I recall my thought from earlier. I do want to say I do think Casey Bloys kind of just sort of air waving away the question about the Divisive House of Dragon fan base. It probably doesn't bode well if you're hoping that the House of the Dragon team actually listens to Martin and changes things going forward. But I also don't think it's substantial enough to read it one way or another. Man, do I ever want to hear what they're talking about right about now, whether they do pivot at all or whether they stay to their chosen course. But we can't know. We don't know. And until Ryan Condal and Sarah Haskam on this show and interview us or we interview them in a very congenial, friendly atmosphere, we won't know. We will when that happens. Hi, Ryan and Sarah. We'd love to have you on.
Yes. Yes, we would. Anytime. I think, that's a really good point. Like, it doesn't necessarily bode well, that dismissiveness. At the same time, George hasn't posted any more blog posts about the HBO stuff. So that probably bodes well also. Like, maybe they're talking stuff out. Who knows?
I don't know.
But I've just got it. Like, part of me is like, why? Why do you have access to a person like that and you don't listen to them? So, like, just a little bit of spin-off history here. So we've got House of the Dragon and we've got A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Before those were in production, HBO tried to make this show Blood Moon, and they had a whole bunch of spin-off ideas, and Blood Moon had no real basis in any source material. Elio Garcia Jr. from Westeros.org. I was reading, he was talking about this the other day, that George was apparently reluctant on Blood Moon, partially because of this, because, you know, it was just an HBO idea. They went straight to pilot, so they didn't even write a script or anything. They were just like, hell yeah, go film the thing. They put a ton of money into it, and then were like, oh, that's real bad. We can't show people this. But like Martin, so when they originally pitched him on doing spinoffs, he said The Dance of the Dragons and Duncan Egg.
Obviously.
From my books, those are the two most logical ones to do. And then HBO had to go around doing a bunch of stuff before they came back and said, maybe you actually knew a thing or two. And those were the ideas we should probably do. And I get a similar vibe here where it's like now House of the Dragon is going. They're kind of disregarding his insight. But like, you know, there's a difference between an author just being precious and an author like George R. R. Martin, who's worked in television on a bunch of like The Twilight Zone, Beauty and the Beast in the 90s or 80s. Like, it's not, he wrote for Game of Thrones for half of its run. It's not like he doesn't know the way these things work. So there's a little bit of like, are we really back to square one here where you took his advice, you put these two shows in, and now one's halfway through it and you're not listening to him anymore? That just baffles me personally. And part of it maybe is HBO is a different company now than it used to be. But it is like, what will it take to just learn this lesson to maybe listen to the guy who made these things?
I mean, I definitely agree that the show would be better off if it listened to the guy who made the things, if it listened to George R. R. Martin, who, again, is one of the most successful authors and one of the highest quality fantasy authors definitely alive. So, yeah, it seems like madness. No, it doesn't seem like madness. I think I understand where they're coming from. I think they've been locked in that room for a while. They've come up with this idea. They think it's for the best. And that's probably hard to shake off. And you said about HBO being a different company. I think I said this last week before. HBO is so unique because it's had so much huge success because it's let its creatives do what they want to do without much interference. That's how you get The Sopranos and The Wire and Sex and the City and a lot of these shows that pushed Game of Thrones that pushed boundaries.
Yeah.
But that cuts both ways. Generally speaking, I think if HBO were a different company, they would make them pivot back to what Martin says, or they would have a stronger hand. I think they don't because they're HBO and their policy is we're hands off, which is, I think, generally speaking, a great thing, but it can backfire sometimes.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you said. I think generally that's really good. It is an interesting situation. Like, what I wouldn't give to like know what Ryan Condal's thinking right now. Just because, like, you know, like George put him forward for this job. Like, he's talked about how he, like, his agent called him and was like, did you meet with George R. R. Martin? Because HBO wants to hire you. Like, you know, it really was because of Martin that he got this job. And not to say everything with the show is Condal's fault. Obviously, I don't think that's the case.
It's a confluence of stuff.
It is absolutely a confluence of stuff. But I'm so interested. You know, this is such a really unique situation where an author has made their displeasure known, of an author of that level, while it's going on, where it's not just like they're firing off at the hip. Like, I made this comparison to Brandon Sanderson recently with The Wheel of Time, because when Sanderson shades The Wheel of Time, it feels like he's venting. Like, this isn't that. It feels like there was a purpose to the shade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, it will be interesting to see what happens. And if A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is fantastic and people love it, which I have a feeling could be the case, and it's faithful, who knows how that will impact stuff. It'll be interesting. It's interesting times.
It is so weird, but it's fun, and I'm glad to be covering it. And we're happy to interview anybody who wants to talk about it. Particularly George R. R. Martin, Ryan Condal, Sarah Hess, Casey Bloys. Why not? Bring him on.
Yeah.
Before we move on, let's hit a couple of quick comments. You guys are doing lovely. Thank you for weighing in. Lizzie asked, we believe the rumor that Winds of Winter was badly written and that he had to rewrite it all in 2016. I've never heard that, and I don't buy that. I think George R. R. Martin is the kind of guy who has documented a lot of what he does and how he works, and that just doesn't seem to jive with it. I just think he drowns in detail. I think it's hard for him to untangle all these knots.
I think if that were true, I think if that were true, he would have said it, honestly, because he did say that about A Feast for Crows and A Dance with Dragons, that he spent around a year and a half, I think, trying to make, there was supposed to be a 5-year gap after A Storm of Swords, and that A Dance with Dragons was going to be the next book. He spent like a year-ish working on that before deciding this just isn't working. He scrapped it all, and then he wrote what became Feast and Dance. But he was transparent about it. He says that to the fans. So, yeah. Which is why we're in this situation we're in with House of the Dragon.
Kevin asked if we think the Aegon's Conquest will be a show. I think if there's a third show that's greenlit, that's probably going to be the one. But I do not know as of yet. But if anything else happens, I'd guess it's that one. Lizzie Pines of the Nymeria series. I'm kind of glad that they're... I don't mind the idea of doing some animated stuff to break it up. I think that could be intriguing. I don't mind that.
And well, so Nymeria, did they say they were doing Nymeria animated? I thought that was Sea Snake.
I think it was too. I don't actually recall if they said Nymeria is going to be animated or not.
Me neither. Let us know in the chat if you know. So Aegon's Conquest, I agree with you. I think if they do another one, it'll probably be that. Mm-hmm. That's going to make for a very Targaryen heavy run of shows between that Duncan Egg, which, like, without getting into spoilers, does involve quite a few Targaryens, and then Aegon's Conquest. So the guy who's doing Aegon's Conquest is also doing Matt Terminator Zero, right? Yes. So I think I could see an Aegon's Conquest show happening, but maybe not till House of the Dragon's done. Or till it's starting to wind. Yeah. Like, I could imagine them extending House of the Dragon with different eras of Targaryen history or something like that, which would be really interesting.
Even Duncan Egg, in theory, could get into like some of the Blackfyre stuff if they keep going beyond the novellas. But listen, that's like a few bridges down the river bend. We'll cross those later.
Yes. I would love to see a Nymeria series, just for the record. I'm glad they didn't rush and do that one. I don't think it would make any sense for that to have been like the next spinoff or something. But Nymeria's story is really, really cool. And it's the only time, I think, in any of the stuff that George has written about where you see the southern continent, Sothorios.
Yeah,
so true. I would be all about that if that happened.
Yeah, I'm into it. Let me just segue here. We're talking about Mattson Tomlin, who's working on the Aegon show. Mattson Tomlin is also writing the Batman Part 2 coming out in a couple of years. Yes, he is.
Wow.
With Matt Reeves. Tomorrow, HBO is releasing a new limited series, premiering a new limited series called The Penguin, which is spun off from the original Batman movie, where Colin Farrell puts on 13,000 pounds of makeup and prosthetics and plays Oswald Cobblepot, changed to Oswald Cobb in the series, a.k.a. The Penguin, a.k.a. Batman's, I don't know, third or fourth biggest villain. Now he has his own show.
He's up there.
I've seen all 8 episodes. And Daniel, I wasn't sure what I was expecting going into this. I think I had some, I'm skeptical by nature, but I think I maybe had a feeling in my head, like, okay, a spinoff about like a secondary supporting villain from a movie being given their own show. Sounds a little like bloat, sounds a little needless on HBO.
The skepticism was warranted.
Sure. I mean, and I liked the Batman movie. I like Colin Farrell in it. I mean, mostly I didn't notice him. Mostly my reaction to the Batman was like, that was Colin Farrell, but he didn't look at all like Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
I didn't think it screened out for its own TV show, though. I've seen all 8 episodes. Daniel, this show is very good. This show is a really good crime story. I was impressed. I'm not going to say it's been compared to stuff like The Sopranos or Breaking Bad. I'm not going to go quite that far because it is at once this intimate character study of a criminal sociopath. That's very Sopranos. So we're talking about the Penguin. We're getting to know the Penguin. We're getting to know his past, his family life, his drive, what he wants, how he works, how he acts. And then it's also like a Batman spinoff show, right? So there is some explosive Hollywood style twists and turns that I don't think would be present in The Sopranos. But what it was extremely entertaining. Colin Farrell is remarkable. Sometimes I think when there's a really good performance anchoring something, the performance itself can feel showy. This was a performance where Colin Farrell is behind all this other makeup prosthetics, where he is in it the whole time. I'm not thinking of Colin Farrell at all. It's incredibly impressive without feeling like it's very showy, even though it is a technical showy achievement to bury him under all this stuff and still have his personality and his acting shine through. He's great. The supporting cast is great. His mother is a big part of it. She was very compelling. She, kind of his Batman villain is the daughter of the big crime guy from the Batman movie. Whose name escapes me, whatever. Falcone. There you go. Sophia Falcone.
Yeah.
She's a lot of fun. She goes on a whole arc. It's a full series. It's rich. There's incident every episode. It's definitely bingeable. I kept wanting to keep watching it. Beautifully made, well written. I'm gonna stop short of saying like brilliantly written, because there are some bits that kind of rushed through, some bits that I thought maybe could use a little more time, but very fun to watch. This show's just a lot of fun to watch. I really liked the show a lot. I loved Colin Farrell.
Man.
I liked the world. I was emotionally affected at times. I was excited. It's just good. This is a good show. And maybe because I had low expectations going in, or not low, just not sky high, that benefited it. I think we're really going to like this. It's good. I endorse The Penguin.
Man, you're getting me hyped here. So I do feel like, so the skepticism of, did this character need a spinoff? Is this, you know, HBO getting high on its own franchise fumes? I think hearing how excited you got for The Penguin, because, you know, you do tend to take kind of a skeptical eye, especially with the superhero stuff sometimes.
Sure.
That makes me really excited. Like, I fully believe you that it's going to be great. That's really cool. And that premieres tomorrow, September 19th. Do we know if it's, so it's weekly drops, right? It's not all tomorrow.
It's so weird. Okay, no, it's premiering tomorrow, the premiere on Thursday. And then the second episode premieres two Sundays after that. So it's tomorrow is the premiere. And then
I see
the next Thursday, nothing happens. And then the Sunday after next Thursday, the second episode premieres, and then they keep getting released every Sunday thereafter. I don't know why they're doing this. It probably has something to do with trying to give the third season of Industry a decent lead in. But I don't know why they wouldn't just like hold the episode over and just play the premiere before the episode of Industry on Sunday, like they were going to do. I don't know why they're doing this Thursday thing. But you know, whatever. Who cares? I still enjoyed it. It's still good. I still think it'll find an audience. And it leads nicely into the next movie. Everything just pretty much worked. There are some good actors in it. Clancy Brown shows up as Sal Maroney. And then you probably know
her
name.
That's always good.
The politician from The Expanse with the deep and gravelly voice.
Shohreh Ghoshlu. I'm sorry. That's I'm saying her name wrong.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Anything. Her and Clancy Brown. That's a good sell. I would watch those two in anything.
I mean,
do they really?
And they're just bit players.
Woo!
So that's it's got a very high pedigree. It's very well made. It's well written. It's well paced. The characters are earnestly developed. I was honestly invested. And it's a Batman spinoff show that has some crazy Batman stuff. Batman's not in it, though. Just FYI. Don't go looking for Batman. But I didn't care. I didn't
Can
care
I
that
ask?
Wasn't in it because I was in it. So I didn't really mind.
Good.
Go ahead.
He doesn't need to be in everything. Like, he's going to get a whole other movie. I think it was probably smart to not make this a Batman-focused show.
Sure.
But what I want to know, very important question, and don't give us any, like, real spoilers, but are there actual penguins in this show? Will I get my planet
I'll
Earth
go
fixed?
Ahead and give a spoiler to that? No.
not a penguin. Single penguin?
You were expecting real penguins, huh?
I don't know. Maybe he goes.
It's not. The penguin's the main character.
He goes to the zoo. He's real sad.
I don't recall this from the movie, but he has like a bum leg, so he kind of waddles everywhere. That is why he gets the nickname the penguin. It worked. It's a little detail they don't really mention or don't really bring attention to, but it totally fits. I got it. There's a lot of little fun details like that. It is a well-crafted show built with love. It's a good show. I'm looking forward to seeing what people think about it. And also, I'm flattered that Leo noticed that I tweeted about the penguin, and it was my first tweet in years. Yeah. It feels good to be stalked. And it was, because I got jealous because we have someone named Michael Patterson who works at FanSided who tweeted about, I think, Agatha All Along, and that tweet went viral. And I'm like, yes, I don't actually go viral. So I tweet about the penguin, hoping I could live up to the example set by Michael Patterson.
Nice. Michael, if you're listening, you're an inspiration. But,
you are an inspiration.
Yeah, the trick to that is you got to tweet. So the penguin must be pretty good if it got you back on your own Twitter for the first time in years.
That Michael Patterson success. I hate when people have success. Good question. I'll do the question from Leo because I think it's a good one, and then I'll move on. Does the show make us care about him, or is it the point of the show? I think the question of should you care about the penguin, who does objectively horrible things, is definitely at the heart of the show, and I think the show has an answer, but it pulled me in different directions throughout, which is how I want to feel when I'm watching a lot of shows, but especially ones about kind of morally compromised people. Who should we like them, should we not, do we approve of them, do we not? I like when shows dig into questions like that, and this one does, so I approve.
Yes I
agree. Cool. Valerie, everyone can retweet Dan right now. Yes I'm kidding, mostly. Okay. we gotta move on.
Mostly. Yes, there are other things to watch
as usual. Read, we're experience. Gabbing away. Anything you're watching right now, watching, reading, that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm still watching The Rings of Power, obviously. That has a new episode tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I liked the fifth episode. Was probably one of my favorites of the show.
Yes.
It was a good episode.
I completely agree. That was one of the better ones they've done.
Yeah, they did a great job with the Joffrey-ass dude. Kemen, I think his name is, Farazan's son. He was real loathsome. It's the first time the show has had like a loathsome villain that I hated. So that props to Rings of Power on that. The Numenor stuff I thought was really good in the last episode, and it needed that because Numenor's felt a little unbalanced so far. Beyond Rings of Power, I'm still reading The Gods Below by Andrea Stewart. I'm probably going to finish that this week. That's been pretty good, kind of reminiscent of Mistborn with the way the magic system works, but with a world that I think is a little more I don't want to say more interesting, but I personally like it more because there are gods and people who have antlers and, you know, more of that fantasy juice antlers. That Mistborn didn't always have a lot of that. Beyond all that, the other thing I watched that I gotta recommend is Rebel Ridge. Have you heard of this movie, Dan?
No, I haven't heard of it. What is it?
It's a thriller that's on Netflix. It's a Netflix movie, and it's probably the best Netflix original movie I've seen in a really long time. It's about this, I don't want to say too much about the main character, but this main character, this dude who is basically, the movie starts with him being pulled over for no reason by cops in this small town. And they do a bunch of really shitty stuff to him. And then it comes out that he has a history and a past, and he's just trying to do a good thing. And the cops are so corrupt in this town that it becomes just this swirling vortex of things going wrong as abuses of the system pile up. Really, really good movie. I watched that last night and like highly recommend that film.
Bridge. I heard of it. Got Ben Jack watching Slow Horses, which is one of those shows, Horses, that I feel like a lot of folk have heard about, and Bushmaster, that looks good, and I just haven't found time to watch, heaven willing. And I'll always take an Interview with a Vampire question from Under Skyline, asking where can I watch the second season. Season one was so good. I agree. Season one was so good. Season two is even better, if you can believe it. I don't think that one's on Netflix. I believe you might need to go to AMC Plus, which is one of those streaming services that you just learned was a streaming service, to get it. I watched it because they gave me screeners. So, which is a privilege that I do not take for granted. Thank you, AMC. Now, go ahead and put the second season of Being with the Vampire on Netflix or Max or something else, because ain't nobody watching anything.
That's the hard thing. Yeah, that's the hard thing with some of these shows. Like, there are absolutely AMC shows I've wanted to watch, and I just don't have AMC Plus, like Dark Winds, which season, I think at least season one of Dark Winds is now on AMC or on Netflix. So I will be watching that and Interview with a Vampire soon. Agatha All Along also premieres tonight, so that's another one that's on my radar to hit up. And I just need to shout this out because I think this is so cool. So, you know Gizmodo, right, Dan?
Yeah.
So, one of the former writers of Gizmodo, their name is Lynn Codega, is now a writer's room assistant on Interview with the Vampire Season 3. I just think that's so cool. I saw them, yeah, I saw them tweeting about this the other day because they just were so hyped on the show, and one thing led to another, and now they're working on Season 3, which is gonna, I have a feeling Season 3 is gonna be a riot of a good time.
Oh, me too. Wait, they got that just from writing about it? How intriguing. Okay, we'll see if that leads anywhere.
I think that's what started the ball rolling. They had a good thread about how one thing led to another. But yeah, they were very hyped about the first two seasons, or the first season.
It's a good season. Yeah, I love it. Nicole asked if we've seen Agatha All Along yet. No, we have not. That's one we didn't get screeners for. But we'll be watching it, so it'll be next week and chime in on our thoughts on that. But that'll be next week.
Yeah,
and before we get to next week, why don't we go through the WIC News Lightning Round, where we give our 20-second opinions on the news of the day we couldn't get to the main body of the show.
Let's do it.
All right.
Let's Sounds good.
Okay. Go ahead and ask me first. Yeah.
Okay. Shogun won 18 Emmy Awards, which is the most of any show in a single season of television. There are apparently two more seasons of Shogun coming.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised that it won a ton of Emmys because that show was what was really good, historical fiction drama. I was surprised to hear there were two more. I thought there was only one that we'd heard of. I think that was new information that came out at the Emmys from the showrunners. They're playing with fire a little bit. When you go beyond the source material, is it going to turn out well or is it going to turn out badly? Right now, they have everyone's love. So run with that, see what happens. All right. Yep.
Fingers crossed for Shogun.
Daniel, I think you've seen this movie. I have not, so I wanted to ask you.
So long
cast
ago.
Cast members of The Goonies, a classic 80s adventure comedy, are bickering over whether or not there's a sequel coming. There seems to be a bit of a split, with Sean Astin like kind of hinting there is, others saying no. Would you watch one?
Yeah. Probably, with my spirit split open in my hands, wondering how we got here. I mean, I like The Goonies when I grew up. I haven't seen it since I was a kid. I don't, that's one of those movies where it's like, we don't need a sequel to this. Please just make other movies. Let it be its own thing. I thought this might have been a publicity stunt to encourage people to sign up to vote in the US election, because I saw someone kind of tag it along with that. So I don't know if it's an actual movie that's happening or it was just a thing to raise voting awareness. Or I'm just talking out of my ass. You decide.
Who knows? Okay.
Okay. So next, this one makes me very sad. I won't lie. Yeah. I like this show. Speaking of my spirit being split open and in my hands. Dan, what is your opinion on this? Apple TV Plus canceled its new show, Time Bandits.
I forgot that you watched this. I would have asked this to you. Sorry. Yeah, it's unfortunate that Apple TV Plus, they canceled the Time Bandits, this adventure, time traveling, kind of for all ages dramedy based on the movie from the 80s. It seemed like a good show. I'm surprised that Apple canceled it, because usually they stick to things. They have so much money and like a we don't care, we'll just keep going attitude. But they must have been tightening their belt because they decided to cancel this. A shame. Rip.
Yep.
Daniel, I know you know about this. There is an animated feature film called The Witcher, Sirens of the Deep, and it is coming out on February 11th of 2025.
Yeah, it was originally going to come out this year. They just announced this week it's coming out next year. I'm excited for this. It's based on a short story that they didn't have time to fit in season one. It's got Doug Cockle as Geralt. That's the same guy who plays Geralt in the video games. And because it is just a short story, I'm hopeful it'll be a little more faithful. Geralt faces off with mer people. It should be a good time. This should be a slam dunk animated movie. We'll see what happens. Speaking of things coming out next year, The Last of Us Season 2 will be out before the end of May 2025.
All right. I'm willing to accept it. This 2 years between seasons thing, it wears on everybody. It's going to be 7 episodes compared to 9 in the first season. Yeah. I feel like people are still hyped for it. I feel like it hasn't gone away from the conversation. So I feel like this will be a hit. Man, I just wish they found a way to get this out sooner. But I'll watch The Last of Us. Bring it on. Daniel, keeping up with the release date stuff, HBO CEO Casey Bloys thinks their new from the ground up Harry Potter TV show will be out in late 2026 or early 2027. Thoughts?
And that's about 100 years too soon for my tastes. I really hate there. Everything. I really don't like that they're making a Harry Potter TV show, so I have the opposite of excitement for that. Both because we still have the movies, they're fairly recent, and J.K. Rowling should not be getting any more money from anyone right now, in my opinion. So, good luck.
Oh, that is a can of worms that cannot be addressed in 20 seconds. So just keep it asking questions.
Nope. That there are some things I am fine with throwing blatant shade at, and continuing the Harry Potter franchise is one of them. Okay, but this is cool. So the fourth Wheel of Time book, The Shadow Rising, just released a new audiobook version today, which is read by none other than Rosamund Pike.
Yeah, The Wheel of Time, honestly, that might be the fantasy show that I'm rooting for the most at this point. I think it's really good, really fun, and underwatched. And I'm actually reading the Shadow Rising right now, well, a different audiobook version. I'm almost done. And nice. I hope it's a success. I hope people find this series. I hope the show continues. I hope it. I really want that show to keep going. What a good show. What a good actress.
What a good book.
Hit it. and finally, Daniel, I think you wrote this about this today. They released some images from the upcoming Star Wars show Skeleton Crew. I believe that's Jaleel White, aka Steve Urkel, second from the left. Did he do that?
Yeah, apparently he did do that. I started to get excited about Skeleton Crew.
Did you?
I won't lie. They talked a lot about space pirates. It's Jude Law and a bunch of space kids going on a quest. They're going to face off pirates. The thing that got me psyched is that John Watts, who did the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies, said, aside from Star Wars pirates, he was also inspired by The Secret of Monkey Island, which is an old LucasArts game that is very funny. So anytime someone's like, our pirates are inspired by Monkey Island, like, I like the vibes you're giving off.
I'm intrigued. Yeah, and I think the vibes in this show were pretty good. Then we had solid vibes, good vibes, exciting vibes. Come back for more good vibes every Wednesday.
Oh, you mean our show?
2 p.m. Central Standard Time. Yeah, you and me and the dog and Richard and the picture of the horse behind you. We stream live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time on the Winter Spring Facebook page and YouTube page. Also available to download in podcast form, iTunes, YouTube Music, wherever podcasts are available to download. We are there. Give us a like. Give us a subscribe. Why not? What's the worst that could happen? Nothing. Only good things. And we hope to see you here again on Take the Black, home of the exclusive George R. R. Martin interview and the future exclusive Ryan Condal and Sarah Hess exclusive interview. Maybe some point in the future. Manifest your dreams and good night.
There you go. Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join
join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.